History in 5 Songs with host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Well, hello once again. Welcome back to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, and over 40 other podcast platforms. So this is episode 218. I'm calling this Hair Metal Wins by 70s Bands. So I wanted to, episode because it is a history again. I like when these ones like kind of lay out a history, remind us of what happened at a certain time. And this is a happy episode because, like I say, I'm calling it Hair Metal Wins by 70s Bands. I'm doing this to show the abstractness of success. This all of these examples that we're going to talk about here had varying degrees of success in the hair metal years. So yeah, by definition, what we're talking about here is bands that started in the 70s and what did they get up to in the 80s when hair metal hit. So most of these are, well, actually all of these are hard rock bands of the 70s that you would suppose might participate or not in hair metal. They did. And again, to varying degrees. When I get to the honorable mentions, I'm going to mention a few that, are bands that maybe you wouldn't expect would participate, but sort of participated in a way. But we'll get to that later. So what I like about this is just this idea of celebrating the fact that, this is part of your past. This is part of your story. Embrace it after the long wash of history. These songs are still played and celebrated. There's a difference. Slice of the demographic than people who grew up in the 70s. There are people who grew up in the 80s who are celebrating this as nostalgia that is really old now already. Let's get into it and we'll again celebrate the different ways that I think these particular 5 acts navigated the hair metal years. Take a listen to our first one here. This is Alice Cooper with Hurricane Years. I'm hanging on like a spider, blowing in the wind. This storm's gonna tear a hole right through this web I'm in. Thunder, lightning, a wind outside. You're so damn frightened, but it's alright. Alright, stay clear. Alright, so Alice Cooper, we've got him. This is a song, a good sturdy song, good sturdy hair metal song from Hey Stupid. So the interesting thing about Alice Cooper navigating these hair metal years is that, of course, he almost died during the blackout years. Speedballs, crack cocaine. He was like a pioneer in many things, and he was even a pioneer in drugs, as it turns out. But no, he made these strange, obscure, kind of new wavy albums that didn't go anywhere, that weren't promoted for Warner Brothers, essentially. Then he almost died. He goes away. He comes back from being like 100 pounds, under 100 pounds or whatever. And he comes back, he gets a new record deal. So essentially, he comes back with Constrictor in 1986. Now the interesting thing about Alice in the hair metal years is that he becomes kind of like the non-ironic version of Alice Cooper. He's just like, this is what I am. This is what it is. I'm giving you the greatest hits of my image. I'm giving you the greatest hits of my personality. And as he likes to explain it, he's no longer the victim. Like the old Alice Cooper, and frankly, this is somewhat from being drunk on stage and just being overworked. But he said the old Alice Cooper had this, you look at the look that he was in and like the stained unitard and all that. He had this persona that was a little more complicated. He considered Alice to be a little bit of a victim. Just kind of out there in the wind, being blown around, a little bit of something to be bullied. So when he comes back, you know, his narrative as he frames it, you know, as if we can't see it anyways, but Alice is such a great talker that he does frame it, that he comes back and says, this is a strong Alice. This is a winner Alice. It's almost like Kane Roberts is the personification of this new Alice personality. So yeah, we have the slasher metal years, that I like to call them, with Constrictor in 1986, didn't serve. He's on his new deal with MCA. Didn't certify, although it did go gold in Canada. Then we get Raise Your Fist and Yell, which also didn't certify, but went gold in Canada. So these were bubbling under albums. People were talking about him. He was actually doing okay, even though these records didn't certify. Then we get up to Trash in 1989, and he's right in there, you know, working with all the Song Doctors. The band is switching around. He's got different members going around. It's all the LA scene sort of thing. Trash is a hit all over the world. It goes platinum in the States. And then Hey Stupid, which we played this song off of, July 2nd, 1991, it goes gold. So he basically has a good career all up into this time. I just wanted to kind of go through, you know, to show you how hair metal-y Alice is. So Hey Stupid, the funny thing is, when you get up to Last Temptation, he's like now saying, we have to try even harder and be a little intellectual, and there's a lot more work goes into that. But, you know, that's up into the past hair metal years. Hey Stupid is still, you know, firmly in the hair metal years. And you look at, you know, the song credits on here. Hey Stupid is Alice Cooper, Jay Ponte, V, Pepe, Pepe, and B, Pfeiffer, Alice Cooper, Jay Ponte, Pepe, Ponte, Pepper, Pfeiffer, Bullen, Keeling, Cooper, Petrelli, Pfeiffer, West. Then we get Desmond Child showing up for Dangerous Tonight. We've got Dick Wagner coming back for Might As Well Be on Mars plus Desmond Child. We've got Zodiac Mind Warp on Feed My Frankenstein. Hurricane Years back to Ponte Pepe. You know, Jim Vallance makes an appearance on Die For You along with Mick Mars and Nikki Sixx. Dirty Dreams, Alice Cooper, Jim Vallance is back for that one. Wind Up Toy. We've got Alice, Ponte Pepe, and Pfeiffer again. So again, you know, you just see the whole slice of life of what it's like to be a hair metal person. And again, what I like about this whole situation is Alice can now look fondly back over 30 years later on this second life that he got. And this successful period. So he had this successful period with the band. He had a successful period as a solo artist in the 70s before, you know, substance abuse absolutely took over his life. And then you've got this successful period here. And what it does is he can look back fondly, you know, in his 70s and 80s, hopefully, at having this long, remarkable career of these very successful periods. He didn't particularly sell a lot of records in the 90s or ever again. But there is the slingshot effect that you get from all this success that gives you a career now. So when Alice goes and plays now, you know, he can basically, you know, lay out this super impressive history of all these different eras that he's participated in. So that's, I think, really cool. And again, you know, you think of the Wayne's World, you know, being in that movie that was a big hit. I mean, basically, Alice was absolutely talked about. He's the talk of the town. He's a big star. He's actually a bigger star and a bigger legend in the 80s and into the early 90s than even the record sales would indicate. All right, let's take a short break and we'll be right back. All right, back again, episode 218, Hair Metal Wins by 70s Bands. Let's take a listen to our second selection and we shall discuss. This is Aerosmith with Monkey on My Back. All right. right, there you go. There's that complicated hair metal production in terms of percussion where you can't really quite tell what's going on. What's Joey Kramer? What's programming? You've got slide guitar. You know, one of the rare bands that was allowed to live with slide guitar. Although there was, you know, go back to our old episodes. We got dirty hair metal. We got bluesy hair metal. So Aerosmith is a big, big deal in this whole situation. This is from Pump, September 12th, 1989. So Aerosmith's kind of a funny one because, you know, I'm planning, you know, possibly to do, please don't go down the Facebook route and give all examples of this because I think I might make this a three-part episode thing. So just kind of leave it for now, guys. I'm planning on doing... Basically, hair metal fails by 70s bands and hair metal skips by 70s bands. And the skips one is really working out to be kind of an interesting episode. But anyway, so Aerosmith's kind of a funny one in that there's a strong skip element to what they do. But I do want to essentially include them in this wins because they were such an incredible commercial success. And you know, as I had in an argument, a debate with a very smart music buddy of mine, Ralph Chapman, you can see our Contrarians episodes we did together. He's missed his calling. He really should be making YouTube channel. I keep telling him this all the time, but yeah, go see our Shaken and Stirred, our Pete Townsend, our Sticks, our Peter Gabriel 2 episodes of Contrarians. Those will blow your mind. But anyways, I was talking with Ralph one time and he swears up and down Aerosmith was so much part of hair metal in terms of making hair metal. And I argue that they kind of smartly, coolly and interestingly and admirably, I think when it comes to the actual songs, somewhat sat it out and kept being, you know, the great Aerosmith of the 70s, just slightly adjusted. But there are a lot of arguments. I get like the one that he brought up all the time. What are you talking about? Love in an elevator with those O's and all that. And of course the title of that song. But you can add a lot of things, to say that, you know, they completely participated in this whole thing. Such as the Song Doctors, the Diane Warren and the whole Jim Vallance thing and Angel and the ridiculous power ballads, Crazy and Crying and all that stuff. Janie's Got a Gun is kind of like a smart version of a ballad for them that goes back to You See Me Crying and Home Tonight and those kind of better ballads. Think of Joni's Butterfly, right? They are really good when they want to be, but they essentially get jerked around by the business, I think, too much and fall into that. Stevens apparently one of the guilty parties with wanting to be this schmaltzy hair, balladic, even obviously the country thing that he tried. But essentially, let's look at the stats. So Rock in a Hard Place, this is pre-hair metal, 1982, but really, really good album, solid album, but it kind of sets up this whole music. It's a transition point album between the great legacy of Aerosmith in the 70s and the legacy of Van Halen in the 70s, and this idea of this connective tissue type bands, you know, keeping the heavy flame flying a little bit in America when there was a new wave of British heavy metal in overseas. But you think of, you know, Night Ranger and Sammy Hagar and these sorts of bands, even Foreigner during this time. But anyway, so Aerosmith is in there with this album. It is the last for their deal with Columbia. It goes gold. Big substance abuse, switching out both guitarists, but they still make a really, really good album, which just shows the skill and the class of Aerosmith as an organization when behind the curtains, everything is chaos, but they deliver great product. Done with Mirrors, they tried to go back to basics for their first album with their Geffen deal. It's not really a success, but it certainly does not try to be a hair metal album. Although 1985, we're right in the thick of the hair metal years. It goes gold, just shows the power of Aerosmith. But you get to Permanent Vacation, and you've got Bruce Fairburn producing. You know, it's made in Vancouver. You got Mike Fraser on that, Little Mountain Studios. You know, go back to our Go to Vancouver and Try Harder episode. But again, so this is a massive, massive success. It goes 5 times platinum. But, you know, I look at the songs on here, and the most hair metal-y things on here would, I would say, would be Magic Touch. You know, I really don't think Hearts Done Time is particularly hair metal. Ragdoll is a little hair metal, where you go down that stripper pole, you know, hard rock idea. Simurai isn't particularly hair metal. I don't even think Dude Looks Like a Lady is particularly hair metal. St. John, definitely not. Hangman Jury, definitely not. Girl Keeps Coming Apart, not really. Angel, absolutely hair metal. Permanent Vacation, not particularly. I'm Down as a Beatles cover, and the movie is an instrumental, so... not a particularly hair metal album, I wouldn't say. And the great thing about Pump is it isn't either. But yeah, so 5 times platinum, Permanent Vacation. Pump, 7 times platinum. Get a Grip, 1993, 7 times platinum. So they're even carrying essentially the hair metal party of their image, in their image, up all the way into 1993, which is arguably a year and a half after the death of hair metal. But Pump, in 1989, going 7 times platinum, again, I don't think is a particularly hair metal album. I would say Love in an Elevator is pretty close. The song we just played, not particularly, although you do get the vagaries of you know, a lot of production gloss put on Aerosmith. You've got, you know, Janie's Got a Gun. Sure, I guess you can include that in there. The Other Side, somewhat. You know, this is a band with big choruses. And like I say, a lot of production, a lot of weirdness on the drums. My Girl, not particularly. Don't Get Mad, Get Even. It's kind of funny. So this one, you would say not. But then you would say there's so much bluesy hair metal and dirty hair metal that when you get something like this... you know, or perhaps Voodoo Medicine Man even as well. It's almost like Aerosmith is kind of in there as the grandfathers of bluesy and dirty hair metal. Well, I guess they always were. We would have expected that. Even your Cinderella, LA Guns, but definitely your Skid Row and your Badlands, that kind of thing. And then What It Takes on here, yeah, that absolutely fits as well. Depending on how much you think they are part of the hair metal thing, and let's not forget the fashion thing too. Aerosmith did not particularly succumb to that thing either. You know, their photo shoots are pretty understated. You look at the Pump one, they're just all wearing black. You know, the hair's not a particularly crazy. It's a great shot of the band, but it's a timeless shot of the band too, which is very cool. So yeah, Aerosmith, another absolute success in this whole thing. What am I calling this episode again? Hair metal wins by 70s bands. Let's take a listen to our third selection and discuss. This is Van Halen with Black and Blue. Okay, so the Van Halen situation. This is a 70s band, but just barely a 70s band. We got a 78 album, a 79 album. But yeah, they're firmly coming up. I mean, they're starting in 73, 74. But yeah, you listen to that song, and that is absolutely stripper pole metal, stripper pole hard rock. It is true blue hair metal. So what happens with this band? This is from OU812, May 20th, 1988. So they kick off the hair metal years, arguably, with a diamond album in 1984, January 1984. So you could almost call, you know, I've never really thought about it this way, but you could almost call, you know, with the stupendous success of 1984, maybe you want to call January 1984 ground zero for hair metal. We've, you know, obviously it has a complicated history that we've talked about in other episodes. But anyways, they kick it off with that. There's a notable change in the band for 5150, which goes 6 times platinum, 1986. Obviously, we lose David Lee Roth for Sammy Hagar, but Sammy Hagar almost comes in as this freak of nature from the 70s, and from that connective tissue era of the Midland Heartland rock, sort of you know, heavy John Mellencamp thing that he did with Sammy Hagar, you know, certainly in the Geffen years. So he comes into this as an old guy from a long time ago, but he comes in as a perfect sort of poster child for a 70s guy transitioning into you know, a great hair metal situation. So this band, obviously the hair metal-y things about this band are somewhat the look. You know, they try to keep it a little bit 80s new wavy with their look and not go particularly fully hair metal. So that's an interesting thing about Van Halen. They think they're a cut above the rest. They're dressing a little more like Rush than they are like Poison, I suppose. But yeah, they've got that. They've got now lots and lots of keyboards. They've got these absolutely gloopy, syrupy, sappy power ballads, and quite interesting with Van Halen. It's a lot of them are up tempo, so they're more like pop songs than they are ballads. But yes, yeah, so that one goes 6x platinum. OU812 goes 4x platinum. And that album, of course, is full of this sort of stuff as well. Just to go back to 5150, since I have these out, I may as well mention them. Songs like Good Enough and Best of Both Worlds are just such party metal songs. And hair metal was all about partying. Love Walks In and Dreams Are Your Ballads. You've got your OTT, where metal bands try to, or these hair metal bands try to show their metal cred, so they play, you know, double bass fast things like Get Up. And Why Can't This Be Love is just an amazing, amazing, well-written poppy song. But when you get into OU812, it just continues with the sort of, you know, goofy party metal in Cabo Wabo. Finish What You Started is the whole let's try to be Van Halen-esque from the past and Led Zeppelin-esque with the acoustic song. Let's show our blues roots, right? But yeah, this Black and Blue is just gratuitously, like I say, stripper pole music. AFU Naturally Wired, you know, fast, hard, rocky. Mine All Mine is my favorite song on it. Source of Infection and Sucker in a Three-Piece are again, these sort of like, kind of like you know, materialistic, misogynist sort of hair metal things that is, you know, become the reason why hair metal needs to die. When It's Love is just one of your crappy ballad type things. But yeah, like I say, they keep the party going as well by coming back with their Try Harder album for Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. And, you know, I think this is, you're a little more into the, even though with Sammy Hagar, you're always going to sound fairly hair metal, I do feel there's an admirable Aerosmith quality to this album where they're trying to be more heavy Van Halen, staying outside of the trends. And I think a metaphor for that is right now where they're trying to do, it's kind of like their version of Living on the Edge, which you're going to get later, right? The thoughtful mellow song sort of thing. But yeah, there's so much on this album that goes to hair metal tropes. Again, the sort of misogyny, the party, the hedonism, the materialism, like I say, always as well, because Sammy always wants you to know that he's a winner in this world, right? So you get that a lot as well. But yeah, Pound Cake and Run Around. You get things like The Dream Is Over, again, trying to be a little thoughtful. Top of the World is just more like giddy, we are on top sort of thing. That's another thing about hair metal guys. They all wanted to sort of talk about how they're winning. So anyways, Van Halen, an interesting debate. Who do you think? Let us know in the Facebook comments. Who do you think was the most successful of these 70s bands navigating this hair metal thing? I think it's basically between Van Halen and Aerosmith, but we still have more to go. Take a listen to this. This is our fourth selection. This is Scorpions with Media Overkill. Okay, so here's an interesting case. I don't think this is a particularly successful band, but they are a band that smartly navigated the hair metal waters pretty well. They kick the whole thing out with Blackout, which kind of sets up some of our hair metal tropes in the big epic soft and loud sort of ballad kind of things. You know, you're no one like you. And the beautiful pristine production you get from Dieter Dierk. So they're setting it up with Blackout. Like I say, it's pre-hair metal, super admirable album, probably their most creatively appreciated album, all told, including the commercialism and the obscure Germanicness, which there isn't much of on here, but it's a good mix of everything. But when you get to Love at First Sting, 1984, so this album goes three times platinum. I neglected to mention our media overkill is from Savage Amusement, right? So 1988. I wanted to pick something obscure because as we get through, so we get Love at First Sting, 1984, and I think here they really sort of establish their hair metal bona fides with songs like, not songs like Rock You Like a Hurricane, which I think is a super successful, creative, interesting metal song, but the likes of Bad Boys Running Wild and Big City Nights, mostly those ones, but also even the big ballad type things like Still Loving You, which is their most massive song. But, you know, there's still some good creative stuff on here, like As Soon as the Good Times Roll and Crossfire. But I think what signifies them as a hair metal band and makes them a successful version of a hair metal band is Bad Boys Running Wild and Big City Nights. Now, when you get up to Savage Amusement, we know the big problems. They succumb to the Def Leppard sort of thing. You know, the thing they're going through with Mutt Lange, they're going through it with Dieter Dierks. The perfectionism thing, it takes them 4 years to get out the next record. So Savage Amusement comes out, but sounds good. It's pretty good. People consider it a little bit of a compromise or a cross between Blackout and Love at First Sting. I think it's a heavier album than Love at First Sting. So 1988, it goes platinum, so they're still doing pretty well here. Like I say, it's produced by Dieter Dierks still. You look at some of the pictures around this time, and they did have a ridiculous hair metal approach to fashion, almost like a Soviet Russian, cluelessness as to what we're supposed to look like. So they allowed the costume people to take over the wardrobe consultants, and they looked pretty ridiculous. But the party essentially keeps going, you know, and that 4 year gap, you don't sort of denigrate it that much because they're off of a really big album, so they're getting in some really good touring during that time. But I think the reason that we could call them a great success is because they come back with Crazy World in 1990, and it goes double platinum in the States. I never really think of that album as that big. They've got Keith Olsen producing, who's like a big, you know, trademark hair metal kind of guy. So that makes sense. But, you know, so they get through this whole thing, and they do pretty well. If you think about it, platinum, triple platinum, platinum, double platinum, that's a really good run, even though the narrative when we look back on Scorpion is that it was kind of all over after Love at First Sting. At that point, people start complaining about the band. But I think this is very much like one of my honorable mentions, which I'll mention now because it's so similar. Judas Priest kind of works out this way as well, right? They have the sort of last lauded commercial critical or critical success period in that Screaming for Vengeance, Defenders sort of thing, and they're sort of participating in the hair metal thing a little bit with the packaging of the look and the illustration and the monsters and the production values are kind of getting modern, so they're not really hair metal albums. But then they have the one clear one with Turbo, and it goes platinum, so they're doing well, right? And then they're sort of out. The way Scorpions is kind of out of the conversation, although, you know, Ram It Down, you can consider it has some hair metal tropes still as well, but, you know, it was a concerted effort to go heavy again. And then Painkiller, we're sort of well out of it. So yeah, Priest is in there having the even less remarkable dalliance with hair metal than Scorpions, but it's kind of similar on a success level. All right, let's play our fifth selection, and we shall discuss, and this was the whole point of this episode, this is Kiss with Secretly Cruel. Take a listen. All right, so what I wanted to put in here as almost like the main point of doing this episode, or what made it most interesting for me, is I think Kiss is the most successful '70s band, having this intersectionality with hair metal, but obviously not on a commercial level. I mean, basically, everybody here that we've discussed, who was my first one here? Alice Cooper. Okay, so not Alice Cooper, but Van Halen, Aerosmith, and even Scorpions are kind of more successful. Maybe not Scorpions, because the way we're going to discuss Kiss is kind of going to add up to, well, it actually does add up to Kiss even being more successful than Scorpions, and certainly Priest. So the interesting thing here, not as big as Van Halen and Aerosmith with those monster albums. But the funny thing about Kiss is that, okay, so this song was from Asylum, September 16th, 1985. But the interesting thing here is that this is the band that participates the most out of all these, and the most meaningfully square, you know, right on the definition of hair metal than all of these bands. So they're like just jumping right in. They're almost more important in terms of the history and the volume of music for hair metal than they are for whatever that you want to call what they did in the 70s, right? Which is kind of a complicated thing. It's pop, it's image, it's kind of being in metal, blah, blah, blah. So the funny thing here is that, so Kiss sets the whole thing up. So they're right in there at the very beginning, setting it up, defining the whole thing with Lick It Up, the first non-makeup album, 1983, goes platinum. They're back immediately with Animalize in 1984. More of the same. The party songs, the hair metal songs, they're still being pretty heavy, but so was hair metal in 1984 and 1983. That goes platinum. They're back immediately the next year with Asylum, which I have a really real soft spot for. I really like the Asylum album. It goes gold. They're back in 87 with Crazy Nights. This one goes platinum. So they're really, the funny narrative about Kiss during this time is that they, there's all this talk, if you're like a really deep Kiss fan, you read along and that you kind of get the hints that they weren't really making that much money in the 80s because, ticket sales were down and the shows were expensive and all this sort of stuff. Videos were expensive. So it's almost like they were kind of like spending like they were bigger than they actually were, but they were pretty big. So that negative narrative, I'm trying to counter it here with this pretty impressive run at being a hair metal band. So, the next studio album is Hot in the Shade in 1989, which goes gold, but we often forget that in between there was Smashes, Thrashes, and Hits, which had some new music as well on it, 1988, but it goes double platinum. So their biggest album of this entire period is actually that Hits album. Then what I love is they're back in 1992, so at the tail end of hair metal, they make their best album basically this entire run, and they stick to their guns. They're still a hair metal band, which is impressive as well. Bob Ezrin comes back and produces. So 1992, we get Revenge, which goes gold, and then they cap off this impressive run of creativity. We are talking about Kiss here. It's a certain kind of creativity, but let's call it quantity over quality. They cap it off with Alive 3, which also goes gold. And I look at the track listing of this, and it's just this great history of how Kiss was so important or such a big participant in this hair metal thing. On Alive 3, you get a mix of the songs that helped create this whole thing. You know, it's basically Kiss, Van Halen, and Aerosmith are probably the three biggest bands. And then on a more obscure level, you can maybe throw in Led Zeppelin. But you get the likes of Watching You, I Was Made for Loving You, Rock and Roll All Night, Detroit Rock City, that sort of sets it up in the 70s. You get the working to build the foundation of hair metal years with the likes of Creatures of the Night, Heaven's on Fire. What else would fit in here? Lick It Up. And then you get sort of the the celebration along the way with the likes of Forever. So yeah, they're big with the big power ballads as well. So that doesn't fit because I'm getting to that point. But yeah, so definitely Forever. I guess there's not much from that middle period. And then you get a celebration of the most recent album, which should be celebrated, Revenge, with the likes of Unholy, I Just Wanna, Domino. So they're on here as well. So yeah, what a great sort of, it's 16 tracks. It's a single CD. Over that period, you get this great argument for the argument that I'm making, that Kiss is, in a way, probably the most enthusiastic participant in this whole thing. Just want to knock off a few honorable mentions. Boy, my episodes are getting longer and longer. Billy Idol kind of fits in this. Billy Idol, he becomes almost like this LA denizen. You got Rebel Yell, double platinum in 83. Excuse me, Whiplash Smile, 86 goes platinum. Charmed Life, 1990 goes platinum. And then he's off to Cyberpunk, which doesn't certify. But he's kind of in there participating. Heart, I could have included in this, and they would have been, considered as successful close to Aerosmith and Van Halen. But they have two non-certifying albums. Then they get Heart, the self-titled in 85, which goes 5 times platinum. Bad Animals in 87, 3 times platinum. Brigade, 1990, double platinum. So they're participating in this hair metal thing, although, they're not particularly a metal band, but yeah, there's some heavy stuff on these albums. And even further down the pipeline, you've got the likes of Yes, which you could say are participating in this whole thing. But they succumb to the same problem as Def Leppard and Scorpions, the follow-up to the big 90125 album 1983, which is 3 times platinum, takes 4 years, big generator, and then it only goes platinum, so it's like this overworked, overwrought album, but it's kind of participating in this big corporate, boomy, loud music. You may as well call it hair metal or hair prog. And then it's another 4 years, and you arrive at Union, and they've left the station. It does not sound like Big Generator or 90125, but it goes gold. So they kind of navigate these years pretty successfully as well, and they pick up some hair metal tropes. Bad Company is another one. Rough Diamonds in 82, the last one with Paul Rogers, doesn't certify, but then they come back with Brian Howe, and they've got the likes of Fame and Fortune, which doesn't certify in 86, so they're kind of late to the hair metal game, but they pick up steam. Dangerous Age, 1988, goes gold. Holy Water goes platinum, 1990. Bad Company gets this second life, and these are absolutely squarely hair metal albums, with some of the bluesy touchstones of the past, but still, they're very, very hair metal. And then even Here Comes Trouble in 1992 goes gold. So there you go. I wanted to leave it at that. I disciplined myself to not mention bands that are hair metal fails or hair metal skips, so I can do those other episodes. But there you go. That's the hair metal wins by 70s bands. So that's the happiest episode. And then we'll do a sad one. And then we'll do one that's very, very interesting. The skips one is the one I'm looking forward to, I think, even more than the bad one. So if you like the show and want to support future episodes, please go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button and buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Lee Clifford, Monty Olson, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, and Steve Polari. You can go to martinpopoff.com for all your book needs. Right now, the one that's selling good guns is the second panel book for Weimer. We did the Cure one before, but this is called Dominance and Submission, the Bluish Cult Canon. It's doing rather well. People are liking it as well. I'm starting to get the first reports in. And you get that all at martinpopoff.com. There's PayPal buttons there. I sign everything, ship it out of the office here. Wow, there you go. Another long episode. So long that I'm not even going to give you any homework. See you next time.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.